engage.
Change.
This is 702.
This is 702.
For the curious.
Claire Thompson is my guest. She's head of family law and CEO at WITS. 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 Is it WITS Inc?
WITS Inc.
It's Inc. Attorney in Rosebank. My apologies, Claire. I really, really appreciate you coming through, especially at these very interesting times. I had a conversation a few weeks ago. No, yeah, actually just last week with another colleague of mine that I have conversations with regards to finances about. And this topic came up. And it is the topic of what sort of conversations you need to have with your betrothed, yeah, with your affianced.
An important conversation to have, and not enough people are having it, unfortunately, because they're so worried that it means that they're not in love.
Yeah.
And there's really so much to be said about having the conversation because you are in love and because you want your relationship to last a very long time.
So, sure, but it does admittedly become a little sobering,
of course,
in the midst of the infatuation of the love, all of that kind of stuff, and maybe that is something we need to talk about. That actually, what you are entering into when you decide to get married, is not a fairy tale. It's a very sober reality.
Indeed.
So, talk to me about what should the mindset be before we even get into the legalese. Of people that are betrothed, I'm so sorry, that are betrothed, that are affianced. What is the mental state?
I think the intention to marry is very much a statement to the world that people want to be in a long-term relationship for a very long time.
Yeah.
And I think very often, even when we look at the language that we hear when we go to weddings, it very much speaks to a forever. Or at least a very long time for people.
Yeah.
And if you're going to be in a relationship for a very long time, if you're not talking about money and if you're not talking about finances, you're going to get tripped up along the way. And I'm sure when you have the financial conversation, if you don't have the legal basis upon which to have that conversation, it's very, very difficult to create financial freedom. And that's really important, I think, for people.
And that came out quite strongly in my conversation with Mduduzi Luthuli, very much in the same way that you are telling me right now. But as a rule of thumb, what should people that are in love, who plan to get married, be talking about in the legal sense? What should they be, what should they be broaching?
I think they should importantly be talking about what their assets and liabilities are and what their intentions are for the future. If they intend to be employed for the rest of their lives, if they intend to be self-employed, if they intend to start risky business ventures, start having those conversations because the legal aspects are very, very closely linked to the financial aspects, and we can't divorce the one from the other.
Yeah.
So it's really important to premise the legal conversation on the financial conversation. And in 2019, going into 2020, we cannot avoid the financial conversations before we get married.
And what are we talking about when we say the financial conversations that are obviously going to be sitting on a legal foundation, I imagine? What are we talking about?
What is your financial health, I think?
Yeah.
That's one of the most important conversations.
All right. Yeah. So have you asked the question? Have you asked your question to your betrothed, to the one that you love? Yeah. What is your financial position? And I know that it feels like a dampener. Yeah. It does feel like a little bit of a dampener. The romance is on, you know. The infatuation is on. You're listening to beautiful music. You want to drive to far off places, maybe fly off, go in a bar. But have you asked that question? What is your financial situation? And what am I asking when I'm asking that question?
I think, you know, if unfortunately I'm going to premise it to say that if we don't have the conversation before we get married, it's inevitable that the conversation will be had during the marriage. And unfortunately, as a divorce lawyer, I also see it when the conversation hasn't been had at the beginning and during the marriage, that it has to be had at the end of the marriage.
Is that because there are such different expectations from individuals as they enter marriage? And because there are such different expectations, that only emerges when the sobriety emerges, right?
Indeed.
But what are people expecting when they get into marriage? I mean, you know, I'm poor, so, you know, that's okay. We know that. We don't have to. But especially with people that have means, it appears that that is a conversation that they need to have so that they can align each other's expectations of what happens after marriage as far as money is concerned.
I think irrespective of whether you would define yourself as rich or whether you define yourself as poor or whether you define yourself as middle income, whatever your financial status is, if you're not talking about that with your partner, then we're not succeeding from a legal perspective. When we're looking at your legal marital health, when we're looking at your legal financial health, we really, really need to understand what it is that is in your basket. And I speak often, when I speak to clients, I always ask, what is in the basket? And in the basket, there could be your assets and your liabilities, your student loans, your credit card debt, your house, your car, everything that you have, whether it's assets or liabilities, you need to understand what is in your basket and what is in your future husband or wife's basket. And I think it's as important as asking about someone's status that you want to get married to. I think it's that honest a conversation
and
that we need to have.
And what should be the response to the person to whom that question has been posed? What is your financial status? What should they divulge? What, in order for them to keep the authenticity, the genuinity of their relationship, what should the response be, not only in terms of, I don't know, of the finances, but in terms of the requirements of the law? What should that response be?
I think some of the hardest conversations that people find having is that about debt, because it's very easy to talk about the car that you have, the house that you have, the money that you have in your bank account, the pension fund you have, the savings account that you have, what you spend your money on. People often find it a lot easier to talk about the things that they have rather than the things that they don't, or that the debt that they're in. And that's really the thing that's going to impact your marriage and impact your partner the most, especially if you get married in community of property. And people are usually quite familiar with this term, in community of property or ICOP. And so if it is that you're going to get into a marriage that is an ICOP marriage or an in community of property marriage, if you're not having a conversation with your spouse about debt before your marriage, you're putting them at enormous risk.
You'd be very surprised how few people don't know about the in community of marriage. Could you please explain that? What does that mean when we're saying that people are married in community of property?
So the way I like to explain in community of property is I refer back to this basket idea again, that when you come into the marriage, your spouse comes into the marriage with assets and liabilities, and you come into the marriage with assets and liabilities in your basket. And in an in community of property marriage, at the moment that you sign that marriage register or when that marriage is concluded, it's as though both of your baskets disappear and the two of you get a joint basket. And the reason why I like to use the word basket is because both people hold onto this basket for the duration of their marriage. And everything that you have and everything that you owe goes into this basket. So all your assets and all your liabilities go into this basket. You hold onto the basket for the duration of your marriage. And what's most important for people to know is that if you want to put anything in and if you want to take anything out of the basket, you need each other's permission. And that's very often what's really difficult for people. It might be one thing when you're used to asking your parents for permission for a cell phone contract, for example, or please can I, you know, take out a loan. But it's an entirely different thing to ask your husband or your wife, maybe when you're in your late 20s or 30s or 40s or older, please can I have permission to do a certain financial act? And it puts people under pressure. But the reason why it's a good thing is because it impacts the couple directly. Whatever you are doing with your basket is impacting the other person.
Yeah. So give me a call if you have been thinking about getting married and you are at the point where you believe that you want to spend the rest of your life with this individual. Have you had that conversation? What kind of marriage are you planning on getting into? What are the legal frameworks that you've allowed yourself to be guided by, or perhaps to be encumbered by. Give us a call. We'd love to hear your thoughts about that. What other forms of marriage are there? In community property, what else?
Out of community of property.
Yeah.
So you have in or out of community of property, and then your out of community of property marriage is broken down into with or without the application of the accrual system. And that's where it gets really confusing for people.
Okay, confuse us.
I'll confuse. The easiest of the two is your out of community of property marriage with no accrual. That means that you have your basket, assets and liabilities, your spouse has their basket, assets and liabilities, and for the duration of your marriage, you keep your basket. Your basket isn't shared with your spouse. You don't share your basket. They don't share their basket. There's absolutely no commingling of assets, and you are not responsible for the other person's debt.
Wow. Okay. And I can tell you right now that there are a lot of people who didn't know about that too.
Yeah. A lot of people, because they're not having these conversations.
Yes. Yes. And, or, and the thing is that the reality of the law then emerges when the marriage goes south.
The consequences, yeah.
Yeah.
And so often, I've consulted with so many people who've said to me they really would like to have these conversations, but they're so worried about what the impression will be for their partner's family, whether they'll just be thinking about what they'll be getting out at divorce. And my feeling is very much that if you are prepared to have the hard conversations with your spouse, or your future spouse rather, if you're prepared to do the really hard work at the beginning of your marriage, you have a lot better chance of succeeding in the long run. Because if you can't talk about your financial future, it's a really, really difficult road ahead. And unfortunately, all too often people meet lawyers like me because they can't have those conversations, and then it's too late.
Well, 1-888-303-0702, have you had the displeasure of meeting a lawyer like Claire? I'm glad, because, you know, I'm having this conversation in this way, but have you been in a situation, and what lessons did you learn? What lessons, what advice can you give somebody who's thinking about getting married at this point? I suppose people that got married much earlier have a different value system sometimes that says you can't have these conversations, because it seems to suggest that that's the priority of your mind. You're just thinking about money. You should be thinking about love, right? But you're suggesting here that that too is an act of love.
Absolutely.
That conversation is in itself an act
of love.
Absolutely. You need to explain that to us, because, you know, I'm getting in trouble. I agree with you. I think that conversation is an act of love. It is really an act of love.
It is
not just the performance of love.
No.
It is actually the acting of love. Talk to us about that, Claire.
I think probably one of the most important acts of love before you get married, and I would really encourage people to have these conversations earlier rather than later, and earlier than before your wedding planning starts taking place, because that comes with its own stresses. But start having the financial conversations early, because it really engenders a trust that needs to build between a couple as they go into marriage.
Yeah.
And really, when you talk about that act of love is the statement that I trust you. I trust you to discuss my financial future with you. I trust you to discuss my present financial situation with you. And it's really, really difficult for so many people. And I think one of the reasons why it's so difficult is because so many people are in debt.
Does the relationship not stand the risk of being defined ultimately by a legal / financial conversation? I think that that's also part of the fear that's what we're about. We just are just about laws and finances. How does one rise above that conversation and get into the butterflies, back into the butterflies, after you've been so rudely awoken by the love conversation that you and I are having now?
That, I will say, that conversation might be better had with, you know, the marriage counselor environment.
Yeah.
Than your lawyer, because very often we are the people who come along with the very sober advice. And we very often encourage couples who are getting married Not necessarily to refer back to the antenuptial contract every time there's a discussion about money. Certainly not. I'm not proposing that that's the answer at all. But to meet on a regular basis to talk about their finances, to understand what the couple's financial health is. And I think in a world where grocery bills and medical expenses and school fees and transport costs are an ever-present reality and are ever-increasing, if we're not talking about our financial health together and we're working towards something together as a couple, I think there is very much the risk that is run of losing each other in the day-to-day battle.
Yeah, that conversation is real. It is such a real conversation. And that then begs the question, how real is your relationship if it can't have that real conversation, eh?
Well, we so often encourage that, and it's not a litmus test of the conversation at all. I don't think it should be that. It's not a question of if we can make it through this conversation, then we will stay married. No. But I think there is something to be said about finding the joy in that conversation. How is it fun to plan your financial future together? Find those things. What are you working for together? Maybe it's a holiday. Maybe it's a purchase for the family that's important. And work on a goal that you can work towards together so that having the conversation is not just about the mundane, just about the school fees and the medical bills, for example, so that it's something that you're working towards as a couple. And my
There's so much in this conversation that can be very helpful if we have the right mindset and approach to this conversation. If the conversation isn't viewed as something to be dreaded, to be feared, right? I think that there's so much fun that can be had with that conversation, and that can really deepen the bonds that tie you together. I feel like singing a song. You know what I mean? But confuse me a little bit more. So we've got out of marriage. What's it?
So we've got in community of property, yeah, where we both have a joint basket.
Yeah.
And then we have out of community of property, no accrual,
yeah,
where we each hold on to our own basket,
yeah,
and we don't share.
It's just like you guys live together.
Well, pretty much like people cohabit now.
Yeah.
And I'll speak to you a little bit later about the difference between the variable and the invariable consequences of marriage. Because what we're talking about now are the variable consequences of marriage.
Okay.
Because the default matrimonial property regime is in community of property. And if you go and see an attorney who's also a notary who can write up an antenuptial contract.
A friend of mine has just sent me a tweet that says, yeah, even if you've just paid Lawala and your marriage is not registered at Home Affairs, that is already community of property, right?
Yes.
In community of property.
Yes.
We had a conversation a couple of years ago, by the way, with somebody who is also in your business, marriage, law,
yes,
that kind of stuff. And it became very, very apparent and very clear that there's a lot of guys out there who pay Lobola, want the status of being a married man, the benefits of being a married man, but they like the idea that it's not registered at Home Affairs. Things have changed. Even if it isn't registered at Home Affairs, that union, simply by the paying of Ilobolo, makes it a marriage. And as you said, that it by default becomes an
in community of property marriage.
Yeah, call me. Call
shared
me.
Basket.
011-883-0702. We're talking marriage and the legalese around marriage. I want you, I've got so many calls coming through here. Lots of people wanting to have this conversation, but I also want you to tell me about
out of community of property,
yeah,
with the application of the accrual system.
Let's speak to Selma in Roodepoort. Hi, Selma.
Hi. I'm just finding connection with, there's a third way.
Yes.
At least I don't, it's still valid, but it used to be that it is out of community of property with the accrual system, where you keep what is yours, and he keeps what it is.
Yeah.
But what you actually gain after marriage is shared like as in community of property.
Yes.
Which is not, you both don't have that much, but you still want to make sure that if you brought a property in to the marriage, that in the end you don't walk out with nothing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Selma, thanks very much. You stole my thunder there because that's where I was wanting to go, but thank you very much. Appreciate it. Let's quickly take a call. And would you agree? Would you agree with that, Claire?
I agree with Selma.
Yes.
Insofar as that she says that the third option is out of community of property with accrual. And I'm so glad that she brings up the explanation that she does, because part of it is correct and part of it isn't. And it's a very, very common misperception that I hear about. And it's really, really, it's not an easy system to understand. What she speaks about when she says, whatever you come into the marriage with stays yours, that is correct. When the marriage is still running, parties still keep their own separate basket, like I've spoken about with the other out of community of property regime.
Yes.
The difference with out of community of property with accrual is that when the marriage comes to an end, and that's either by death or divorce, when that marriage comes to an end, we work out what is in the one spouse's basket, what is in the other spouse's basket, and if one of those spouses has shown more growth than the other, then that growth gets shared between the parties. But it's not a hybrid system of in and out of community of property.
Wow.
And it's really, really important for people to bear that in mind.
So this is like a living thing. It's dynamic. So if what you're saying to me is that at the end of the marriage, again, by death or divorce, it's not just a matter of you go your way, I go my way. We look at who has grown in terms of their assets, and then we share the growth,
yes,
not the assets.
Yes, yes, exactly. That's a really, really good explanation that you've provided.
I should be a lawyer.
You should.
Let me speak to Brian in Midrand. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Aubrey. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, man. Go for it. What is on your mind?
Okay, so my fiance and I have been looking at this from the point of view that we're not sure where careers are going to take us, but in the near future, either one or both of us are looking into getting into business.
Mm.
So now, we're not looking at the death or divorce, but rather if the business goes under. And if it's a small business and it's registered in my name, then she would assume liability for the business. This is the thinking that we've got. So we're looking at it in terms of protecting the family from, let's say, a failed business or business venture or something of the like.
Yes, yes, yes. I hear you. Care to comment on that?
Absolutely. Yep. And that's, you know, one of the important reasons why we encourage people to come and see us when they are. And this is exactly the talk about planning the financial future. This is the sort of conversation that we should be excited about.
Yeah.
You're talking about what is it that we want to do in the future? We want to start a business together. And we're concerned that if something was to go wrong, because businesses do sometimes go wrong, what happens and how do we make sure that that other person is protected? And that's the expression of love that we're talking about.
Yes.
And what we very often tell people is that the risk that your in community of property marriage brings when there is some sort of risky financial behavior that might come about in the future is that if there's an insolvency or if there is debt that needs to be settled by the courts, for example, the courts take control, or the liquidator takes control of that basket. They take control of the couple's basket. They see what's in that basket. They pay off the debts with the assets. And if there's anything left, then that only remains in the hands of the couple. But if there's nothing left, both people can end up being sequestrated. And it puts a massive, massive financial toll on a couple. And all too often, again, that's why people go and see divorce lawyers.
Unati in Centurion. Hi, Unati.
Hi.
Yeah, hi.
Mine is a little, thanks for the opportunity to operate.
Sure.
Mine is a little bit different. Mm. If I want to find out, if, for instance, you're in community of property,
yep,
and then one party enters into a debt, right, without informing the other party, then upon divorce, does they, because obviously you're supposed to be signatory to that.
Yes.
Does that mean that if you are not informed,
yes,
or you are not aware of this debt, you are still part of it? And the second question that I have, if, for instance, then the other party is not working for the common estate, right? How do you then deal with that in case of a divorce?
Thanks for the question, Onati. A little convoluted, in my humble opinion.
Great challenging question.
Yeah, absolutely.
Indeed.
Talk to us.
With regards to the first question, as to if the credit was not sought with the other party's permission or consent, it's very much a question of the diminishing of the joint estate without the other person's permission. And I think this is one of the reasons why it's so important for customary marriages to be registered, and the risk that people run if they're not registered, because it's a lot more ascertainable for credit providers to have a look on a credit profile where it discloses whether you are married or not and whether you're married in or out of community of property. And if they see that you're married in community of property, they should take steps to ensure that you're seeking your spouse's permission or have your spouse there with you. But if your marriage isn't registered, for example, then for all intents and purposes, the credit provider very often looks at people as single. And then the question is, whose responsibility is it?
Yeah.
And very often the joint debts do fall into the hands of both parties, unless a liquidator is appointed and unless good reason is given for the reasons why that person's consent wasn't sought.
So what you're saying to me is that because the marriage is not registered, commercially the person can go into business deals, buy stuff, whatever the case may be, at a commercial level. But when the creditor is looking for their money, right, and discovers that you are actually married customarily and maybe not necessarily married in terms of being registered at the Home Affairs, he will then, based on the idea that if you are married, the default regime is community of property, go after both of you.
Strictly legally speaking, yes. Though I will say the proof to establish a customary marriage isn't as simple as looking for a marriage register.
Yes.
There are ceremonies and there are witnesses that need to be called. There are Lebola negotiation letters. There are receipts that need to be produced. And so very often it's not as simple as producing a document saying, look, we signed this.
Yes.
And very often creditors don't have access to that information or don't have the means to go looking for that information in order to satisfy the debt.
Let me stick with the customary marriage thing. I don't know how much you were following the whole WHP story.
Yes,
you were following that story. Very fascinating. I thought it was very fascinating for people in your business.
Absolutely.
Is lobolo legally considered marriage?
The Recognition of Customary Marriages Act gives three specific requirements that need to be met in order for that marriage to be valid. And one of those reasons, or one of the requirements rather, is that the marriage is celebrated in terms of customary law. And what customary law is specific to that particular couple.
Yes.
So there is no one size fits
yes,
all.
Yes.
And so the question then becomes, who can come to testify that that marriage in fact took place?
Yes.
And that's very much a question of how the couple's respective or collective cultures will tell us that that marriage was indeed celebrated.
Yes, yes. So I hear that. But my question is, if there is no register at the Home Affairs, what is that office called, by the way?
Yeah, Home Affairs.
Yeah?
Indeed.
And it is ascertained that ilobolo happened.
Yes.
Yeah? Is that a marriage?
Again, it might be in certain cultures and it might not be in others, because some cultures may require that lobola is finalized and paid in order for the marriage to occur.
Yes.
Others might require that lobola is paid over the lifetime of
yes.
the couple.
Yeah, which is sometimes part of the cultural practice. Yeah.
Indeed.
Sure.
And
yeah.
So can we say that the one is more valid than the other? No. And the Recognition of Customary Marriages Act very much gives us that guidance, that both are celebrated in accordance with customary law and in accordance with that couple's chosen customary law. And so it's very difficult to say
So that's also part of the legal conversation that people who want to get married customarily need to have. Yeah,
indeed.
I mean, even as we talk about the financial stuff, even as we talk about the in community, out of community, with accrual, without accrual, we also need to talk about marriage, entering into marriage, and the definition of marriage customarily.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Especially
okay.
customarily.
Yeah, absolutely. Nico is in, Yeah, Nico is in Soweto. Hi, Nico.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, go for it, Nico.
I'm good. I'd like to comment on the, regardless of if it's in or out of community or property.
Yes.
What happens when there's a child involved?
Yes.
When there's a child involved, both parents.
Nico, are you still there? Can we get Nico again? We've just lost Nico for some reason. Speak to Richard in four ways. Richard, hi.
Hi, guys.
Yeah, go for it.
Very quickly, accrual, well, the ANC with accrual, out of community property, there's another version.
Yeah.
And that is that you can exclude, specifically exclude assets you might have at the time of marriage from accrual. So if you've got a business or you've got a property that's an investment property and you can develop it, you exclude it. So it means that should you get divorced, anything that arises downstream from that property, even if you sell it and it makes money and you go and invest that money again and again and you build it up, you can actually exclude that.
Yes.
So it's, in other words, anything that currently exists doesn't form part of the accrual. Anything that goes on from that point on can form part of the accrual. So
Richard,
that's one comment. I've got two others very quickly.
Very quickly,
Brian mentioned about I think it was Brian, about a business with his fiance. Be very careful because firstly, when you go through business issues like that, I can tell you, love goes out the window and divorce is imminent. I'm almost certain of it. Yeah. When it was such a, and in this case, my cars and cell phone contracts, whatever, all in my ex-wife's name. So as soon as she decided she wanted a divorce, actually she owned all those things. So I had to end up buying the car back that I'd paid for, and you know how that nonsense goes. So that becomes complicated. Mm. Better to try and find some other way, a different vehicle of protecting your common assets.
Richard, I'm going to stop. I've got to stop you there because you've run.
That on divorce, you know, this is what's going to happen. That other assets, because of the business failure, the other assets come back.
Richard, in four ways, I'm going to stop him there. He seems to know what he's talking about.
He certainly does.
Yeah? All right, let's quickly talk to Mbendulo in Soweto. Mbendulo, hi.
Hi, Aubrey.
Yes, how are you, Mbendulo?
Sure. Just want to add something on the issue of customary marriage.
Yes.
Apart from the rituals, the bride must be handed over to the groom's family so that the process is completed. So, not that just you being charged a particular amount and then you pay it and say, oh, I have a wife.
Yes. So
rituals must be performed according. If Ndebele, it must be done according to the Ndebele tradition.
Yes, and even amongst the Ndebeles, they have
various village or where you come from.
Yes. So what you're saying, Bendulu, is that it is not simply the exchange of cows or money.
It is also the
rituals that are associated with that in a shared understanding by both families.
And the bride be handed over according to the rituals or customs.
Whatever the rituals are. Okay, Bendulo, thanks very much for your call. Much appreciated. Reiterating what you were saying just now. Fran is in Rosebank. Hi, Fran.
Yes, hi.
Yeah, go for it, Fran.
There is some revision of marriage law coming on. One doesn't know yet what the outcome is going to be, but it's in process. The other thing is that unfortunately, when you're in community property and one of you is blacklisted, you are both blacklisted.
Yes, yes, yes. I hear you. Fran, thanks very much for that. Let's quickly get to Nico and then we'll get Claire to round off. Nico, hi.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, Nico.
Yes. There's a problem with most South African women, man. South African women go into marriage mostly with most of them without anything, bringing anything into the relationship. You understand?
What does that mean?
Sorry?
What does that mean, bringing anything into the relationship?
Bringing anything to the table. Most of the South African men, you find that the man is working and the woman is not working, but there's still a marriage there. You understand?
Oh, so when you say anything, you mean monetarily?
Yeah, materially nothing. You find a guy with a house, with his own house, working very in a stable.
Yeah.
Getting a stable income, and you find the woman with nothing at all. But we as men, we still go into the relationship. But at the end of the relationship, the woman has got nothing, but gets to live with 50-50. And after that, when there's a child involved, regardless of if the marriage is in or out of community of property, there's a child involved there.
So, yeah. All right, Nico, let me stop you there so that we can let our guest finalize this. I suppose it depends what you think nothing is and what something is, hey?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I suppose if you think that material possessions is the something, maybe you would be inclined to think like Nico, huh?
I think if your sole intention is to bring financial assets into the partnership and one of the partners isn't working, for the same reason a business would fail, so too with the marriage.
Yeah.
But again, it's an important conversation to have before you get married. What is it that you intend to bring to this marriage?
Yeah.
And what is going to happen if one of us isn't working?
Yeah.
Does that mean you're going to fulfill the role of child carer, for example? Are you going to cook and clean and look after the house? And I think that this applies irrespective of gender, which I know is not necessarily the popular view, but I think it's an important conversation to have. And interestingly, in my practice, I act equally for men and women, and I see the same issues for both men and women, that in some relationships men are working and women aren't, in other relationships women are working and men aren't. And unfortunately, if these conversations are not had, and if the couple is not working towards a common financial goal, irrespective of who is and who isn't working, if there is no common goal, the marriage is at risk. And so it's so important not only to have these conversations in the marriage, but after, but also before.
You come back again?
I will, absolutely.
How do people get in touch with you?
They can get in touch with me either on our website, www.witsinc.co.za, or via our Facebook page, or via our Instagram account, or they can give us a call. We're in Joburg on 011-010-0400.
Kay Thompson, Head of Family Law and CEO at Wits Incorporated Attorneys in Rosebank. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you for having me. It's